Hey everybody, this is Hansa.
And Al.
And Terry.
And you're listening to the Omdia Digital Leaders Podcast. Welcome to today's episode. We are very excited and we're having a fun time pre-podcast recording, talking about this topic. You know, as decision makers, all of us expect decisions to be based on data, on information, on logical reasoning, but more often than not, they are based on completely a factor that's completely hidden or unacknowledged in the boardroom, in decision-making circles. And we call it the three P's between ourselves. It's the people, politics, and power. Three things that are in the background but play a significant role in influencing decisions, whether it is technology or organization-wide decisions. Terry and Al, both of you have been CIOs before in your previous lifetimes, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of this. So could you just, you know, shed some light or tell us some great anecdotes, kind of like the one that, you know, we were talking about earlier?
Yeah, I think let's start with this. We're in IT. I hate the name, and we've discussed that before. Mm-hmm. And that means information and technology. Those are all hard, factual things. We provide information so decisions can be made. But my CEO said to me one day, he said, if you had perfect data and perfect information, you actually wouldn't have to make a decision because it would point out what has to be done. So something else has to come into account. So judgment would come into the decision, but also perhaps opinions. And as soon as you start getting judgment and opinions and feelings and beliefs, you start getting into the people, power, and politics space.
Yeah, Terry, and I think this is particularly a challenge for most people in IT, because let's face it, we tend to have a cohort of staff and ourselves who have come from an engineering or a logical background. So that's the way we think. And so we tend to think that if we throw more facts at a situation, if we just find more information, then that will make the decision happen. And often that's not the case. As you say, there are those other things coming into play, not just judgment, but emotion. Many decisions are made on emotion, whether that's overtly stated or it's an underlying part of the decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that I have spoken with enterprises and vendors on plenty of occasions where, you know, especially decisions when it comes to things around legacy and, infrastructure or monolithic apps that have been around for decades, you know, those are so meshed with the organization, and in many cases they define the identity of the organization. So, you know, they don't want to be gotten rid of. People don't want to go messing with it because it completely challenges the fabric of the organization.
That's a really good point, Hans. So that personal investment in a system, I've seen many, many, many times. And in fact, we used to use a shorthand for that say nobody's got an ugly baby. You know, because for many people, that system that they've nurtured for a decade or more is their child. And so for you to appear to be criticizing it, saying it's out of date, it needs replacement, can actually impact them at an emotional level, which is you know, part of their pushback or their decision making.
Yeah, and at a political level, there's a bank that I know of that has spent, you're not going to believe the number, 20 billion. So that what would that be in your terminology? About $2 billion, US dollars, on a ERP system. Not going to name names. They've only managed to implement the pilot. $2
billion. After $2 billion.
After $2 billion and 10 years. But unfortunately, the project, let's call it that, is now too big to fail, and there are too many egos and reputations invested in that project. This thing is going ahead. It never should. The facts say stop immediately and do something intelligent. But the politics and the emotions and the reputations and the jobs on the line have got nothing to do with those facts.
Yeah, one of the interesting things that I had a lot to do with in previous organizations, there's a model called the Herman Brain Dominant Index, HBDI, and many organizations will be familiar with it. Some large enterprises put a significant percentage of their staff through it. But in simple terms, what it does is it you answer a whole pile of questions, and then it divides you into one of four thinking types. And to be clear, no one is all one type or all another type. It's just which type is more dominant, red, green, yellow, and blue, just for ease of reference. The thing that I found most interesting when I did this, it was almost like a wake-up call. I'm 20 years into my career at this point. I do this with a room of 50 really, really intelligent people I work with all the time, and find out they think completely differently to me. And it's not a question of intelligence. It's not a question of education. It's they are, let's say, they are higher on the empathetic scale than I am, but lower on the logical scale, or vice versa. And I found that particularly interesting, and it explains why sometimes you can look at exactly the same problem and essentially come to a different answer, because you, your brain works in a different way. And in fact, in this organization, we actually put our little map of colors up on the wall. So it kind of added, people could go, oh, yeah, okay. And we'd, it was almost like a running joke to say, Al, you're pretty yellow today, or you're pretty blue. That's really blue thinking. Not to try and pigeonhole people, but just to recognize that different people see the same situation in different ways and will make a different decision.
Yeah, and I think it also has got a major impact now with a complete new generation of people entering the workforce. You know, the way the youngsters, you know, 20-year-olds these days look at things and, you know, make decisions. I don't know whether what color they would be, but then the way they make decisions, the kind of information they use, the kind of sources they use is so different from what, you know, people like you and me, you know, who've been in the workforce for 20 plus years have been used to, or we are comfortable with. And again, that is one more issue that adds to the whole PPP topic. You know, people, you know, you have different types of people coming from different backgrounds, different different types of education, different socioeconomic, sociopolitical views that they bring into the workforce. All of this impacts decision making, and it can get confusing, and it does get confusing. And the whole logic part of things, which we believe that should drive decision making, you know, as analysts, that's what we do day in and day out as in our jobs. That's, we look at information, we look at research, and we take a decision based on the facts that we see. But not everybody does that.
Yeah, look, I think let's unpack that, because I think you've opened that up there. So the people side of it, I think Al has covered, which is to do with people, based on the way they think, see things differently. We went through a very similar process. There were 8 types of thinking style, and you basically had a dominant and a subdominant one. And we went through that, and I was something called a resource investigator. I was pretty good at finding facts, but it certainly didn't help on the emotional side of things and the empathetic side of things. But there's also the power side of it. You want to say something else? Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, I remember clearly that my little graph was way dominated by yellow, right? Which is big picture stuff, right? And no detail. And I had direct reports who were hugely dominated by detail and didn't care about the big picture, right? And so you can see how in a particular meeting, and we would laugh and joke about it, I'm going, you know, but yeah, we're going to be here, we're going to be over the hills and far away, and it's going to be fantastic. And they're all going, yeah, but I don't know the steps involved to deliver it, you know? And so I'm getting frustrated going, no one's buying into this big picture. And they are legitimately going, but no one's giving me the steps that I need to deliver. Once you understand that, you go, well, it's not right or wrong, they're good, I'm bad, whatever. You go, no, we think in different ways. And it was really helpful for the team to be able to see those different approaches.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Al. You know, we need somebody to have that long-term vision, be able to see the big picture and what it looks like. And you need the details guys as well. You need people who can talk about what to do in the next 1 year, 2 years down the line, 6 months, and hammer out the goals and milestones that need to be achieved to get to that big picture state. It everybody has to work together. It has to be a collaborative effort. You have to work to your strengths.
It's a synergy between those things.
Absolutely,
because
absolutely. You have to have
we
that.
Worked out the all big picture. It sounds wonderful to say I'm the big picture guy, but that's just if it's all big picture, no one ever delivers anything. It's rubbish. Similarly, if it's all detail, you don't have any vision. So I emphasize again and again, it's not good, bad, one or the other. You've got to have a mix or you're not going anywhere.
And I think the important thing is you've got to recognize the issue. You have to
Yes.
understand, and I see this in a lot of people, is they don't understand that other people, and they don't accept that other people think differently from them. And accept is a very different word from allow.
And to take that, you're quite correct, Terry, to take that one step further, once you've understood it and accepted it, then you factor it into your decision-making strategy.
Yeah.
How do we get the blue people on side? How do we get the red people on side? Are the green people, whatever your model is. But once you've done that, you go, we're never going to get this decision made if we ignore half of the people who want to know the detail, for example.
Yeah, and this makes me think back to, I guess, what, episode 3, Terry, where we spoke about, how whether your transformation strategy is strategic or not. And we talked about aligning the organization to a vision, to have a set mission and set then goals. That this is exactly what we were talking about then. Have a big picture, somebody who can see the big picture, and then someone who can organize people around the big picture. And then you have the details people, details guys who can come in and say that, okay, these are the goals we need to have. These are the checkpoints we need to meet, and these are the things that we need to evaluate to make sure that we are indeed on the right journey. And again, different leadership styles. That brings us
And
to
then
a
you need
whole
the
different
empathetic people to say, who's this
point.
going to affect? How do we bring them on board? And how do we change the way people think? Because I was reading something very interesting the other day, is how do you change large systems? And a lot of people think it's around data and around facts. But in fact, it is around the paradigm that operates in the organization at the time. So if the paradigm is, this is the way we do things, it's the way we've always done it, it almost doesn't matter what facts you have. It almost doesn't matter how much power anybody has. The paradigm has more power, and the paradigm influences the mindset of everybody in the organization so that they can say, okay, we're going to change or we're not going to change. So that's
Yeah.
certainly one element. Gosh, we're getting deeper and deeper. And by the way, there's an Omdia report, Al, waiting in this around, are CIOs all yellow? Are they all big picture thinkers? Or are there some CIOs who are detailed thinkers?
And if they're one type, but what I made sure was, because I knew I was extremely yellow,
Yep.
I made sure I had direct reports who were blue, red, and green.
You surround
Right?
yourself, yeah.
You've got to,
Right.
exactly, you've got to have those other people. Otherwise, it becomes, a groupthink kind of situation where no one's spotting the issue with the detail or whatever it might be.
Yeah, and you just wrote a report on that, how and why enterprises should avoid groupthink, which is available on omdia.com for our listeners who would like to access it. You can get in touch with us at askananalyst@omdia.com. We have talked about people. We need to talk about the dynamics between these people. You have leaders, you have followers, and that's another category of what do you call it, pigeonholes that we put people into. But then there. We have to acknowledge that there is a hierarchy of power within the organization, which is necessary in a way. You cannot have an organization without some kind of hierarchies or some kind of powers being granted to people, because you have to keep everything in order, you have to monitor it, and somebody has to take responsibility kind of thing. But then that creates its own you know, cycle of problems, you know, perceived fiefdoms. Okay, this is my territory, and, you know, I don't like anybody else intruding in it. And my and that, again, influences decisions. So, Terry, you were talking to me earlier before this recording about the whole dynamics of power and the different types of power. Could you just elaborate that for our listeners, please?
Yeah, sure. Let me also suggest not only fiefdoms, and gosh, we know how to talk about this in IT, siloed thinking.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And what is that? That is about people defending territory and exercising their power over their fiefdom. So there's a whole bunch of types of power. Done a fair bit of research into this. There's something called formal power, which is essentially granted by the hierarchy. So if you are the CEO or if you are the CFO, you get given by the hierarchy power over the financial area, or over the CIO would be get given power over technology, if you will. I have a problem. I mean, that is as close to dictatorship as you're ever going to get, our hierarchies, in that I grant you the power to manage this part of my business. This just doesn't work for me, but that's another podcast. But
no, but that is essential. That is required. You know, you don't have a single person who can do everything, you know, so you need to have designated
people. This is why it's
people.
Another podcast,
yeah,
because
definitely.
You and I will fight about this for a long time, but that's fine. I mean, there's an organization in Holland that has 12,000 people and not one manager, I repeat that. And for instance, Hire in China, 50,000 people and almost nobody above a level of supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
There are alternatives, but certainly that's not the subject of today's session. There's also something called consequence power. And in IT, we can use it and or we can be affected by it. And that is the power to create consequences. Unions have consequence mm-hmm. power. They can go out on strike and there can be a consequence. Alternatively, somebody who controls the payroll. Well, the salaries and the the increases or lack of increases, etc., they have consequence power. I think the power of what I call referent power or connection power. And referent power is, and Al is gonna talk about this now, is the personal assistant to the managing director sometimes has more power than any of the people who report to that CEO. And why? Because they have the ear of the CEO and they have to go through gatekeeper power, if you want to call it that. They have to go through the personal assistant, Al.
Yeah, Terry, I was just reflecting on that very point, the whole gatekeeper role. A long time ago in my career, I was the IT manager for a large high school. I'm not a teacher, I'm an IT person. So, you know, I was there to do the technology and set the IT strategy. And of course, from the outside, you assume the most powerful person in a large high school is the principal. And, you know, a few months in, I like you've already identified, I worked out that the most powerful person from my point of view was the principal's secretary. Because if I was lucky, I would get maybe 10 minutes with the principal a week.
She would grant you an audience.
Yeah,
exactly. And I would get 10 minutes. I would get 10 minutes to put forward my idea. But the secretary would have 7 hours or 8 hours a day every day to rubbish my idea if she didn't like it. So you know who I need to get on side for any idea that's going to come in front of the principal is the secretary. And I think you can find in any organization, you've said, you know, the EA to the CEO, the gatekeeper for the diary, the person who has a good relationship with that decision maker is critical in your planning for how you're going to get a get a decision across the line or to go the way that you would like it to go.
Yeah, I'd just like to cover one more type of power, and there are others, but the final type of power, and we know this in the IT world, is called expert or informational power. It's based on my expertise. I have the power to gatekeep and or change decisions or affect decisions. And informational power is based on what I know, not my expertise, but I know that there is about to be a reorganization in that particular division. And therefore, I have a lot more power over people in that division than they do.
Terry, that's called insider trading in some circumstances, and it's very illegal.
Not inside many organizations.
No.
I mean, I'll give you an anecdote. I ran a five-day workshop on developing an IT strategy for a large bank, and the CEO came in on the last day to see what our strategy was about. And he walked in and we said, well, this is our strategy. And he said, well, you don't know this yet, but your department's going to be reorganized and put under three other separate departments. So frankly, this stuff doesn't work anymore.
I bet that was a real motivational speech.
Totally motivational. And he was just exercising his power. He was I'm sorry, but there was ego involved in this. He was able to undo the work of, I don't know, 10 people for a week in just one sentence.
Yeah.
What a rush for him, but...
And that brings us to the last 5 minutes where we have talked about different types of power. Not once have we mentioned logic or rational thinking as being one of the types of power or something that people derive from having that power. So essentially, we are dealing in a situation where it's all about people and their emotions and their backgrounds, their opinions, their viewpoints that they bring. Then we are talking about a whole set of factors that influence those viewpoints, you know, the comfort level with change, resistance to change, for example, and the fact that there's a siloed thinking, the siloed organizational structures, and so on. So in such a scenario, when we have to organize people and organize the whole enterprise or the whole business around a common vision and mission, like we talked about earlier, Terry, what does the business leader have to do? I know I have to bring it back to this topic because, you know, we do a 30 odd minute podcast here and we like got 5 minutes left to touch upon the most important aspect. What can a CIO or a CXO do? Al?
Well, I think what we're really talking about here is politics. Right, we're talking about organizational politics, and I think what CIOs have to do is basically learn from, dare I say it, I feel like washing my mouth out, but
please don't.
Going to have to learn from politicians, right? Politicians know it's about building your constituency, getting people on side, understanding where they're coming from. No political decision is ever
making empty promises.
Well, let's go.
No, let's not make empty promises.
Let's go for the good side of politics rather than the bad side of politics. We're talking about the marketing of IT. We're talking about the CIO marketing their team. We're not just talking about putting a hard black and white ROI on the table and saying, you know, essentially to the organization, look, we've got all the data, it's obvious, and if you don't fund it, you're all idiots, which is really what you're kind of saying. So
what we often say,
I think that the most successful CIOs I've seen, they're almost like working the room all the time in terms of their executive peers. They know what makes them tick. They know what their things that they need, things they don't like, approaches they like. They may have a formal model for it, like the HBDI, or it may just be I know that guy, you know, is really, really logical thinking or whatever it might be. But I think we're really talking about IT politics and IT marketing in a positive way. I reinforce that, Terry, because I know.
Let's do that. Yeah. And we used to build what we called relationship maps.
Yes.
So we would build a map, not a map. So what we would do is we'd say, Let's list all the people who might be involved in this kind of decision or this strategy or whatever it is. And then we would link them with dotted lines or solid lines or very thick lines. And then we would discover from doing this map is, whilst we didn't have a good relationship with, call it the CFO, the marketing guy did, and we had a good relationship with the marketing guy. So we would target the marketing guy in order to influence the CFO. So, and this was formal and it was logical and it was what IT people are pretty good at. We actually mapped, we architected, if you will, the decision.
It's interesting you say that, Terry, because you wouldn't be surprised to know that in politics, and you know, I've had a lot of time in the public sector, that happens for every single government policy and announcement, right? Stakeholder mapping. You identify the stakeholders, what will they want, make, you know, what are their concerns, what are their worries, what are their aspirations, right? How are we going to target this group of people? We can, and essentially that's very similar to what you're saying. So what we're saying to the CIOs is, have a relationship map, have a stakeholder map, have identify the people who are going to object.
Right.
And why are they going to object ahead of time, right? Not be there going, oh, I didn't see that coming, and get the thing you know, knocked back.
Yeah, and essentially it's about looking beyond data. You know, we talked about a scenario where we are moving more and more into using data and analytics tools to, you know, say that this is going to drive decision making, but there is no perfect data. Most of the data that you get is after implementation. It's like post implementation, you know, you get, but what about the stuff that happens before it or during it? Who does it impact? How does it impact? And how does that, you know, going to change the way that people are going to react or accept or reject that particular change or implementation that you're planning to do, whether it's technology or whether it is an organizational structure change or whatever. So it's about looking at the people side of things. You have to be a people person. And for the CIOs, many of them are not. I'm sorry to say this, guys. So sorry to say this, I know. But then when you're so buried behind systems, behind data, behind code, you do not see the people side of things. And I think that is an essential aspect that we have to factor in. Yes, Al?
I think the other thing you have to keep into account is this is all very dynamic.
Yes.
Because it's based on people, it's based on the organization, and it can change on a whim. Terry gave the example of the CEO coming in and going, "Great guys, you just wasted 10 days of your life."
Yes.
Which, you know, I have a lot of commentary about. But I have a similar experience when, as a CIO, I had a manager who was very, head of organization, CEO level, who was very, very, very supportive of IT. And so basically, to the extent of being a geek, you know, it was quite unusual in that level of organization. But it meant I never needed an excuse to get into their office, right? Because I could walk and talk about something I'd seen on the news or they'd read in a magazine or whatever, right? That changed. The organizational hierarchy changed. And a replacement came in who was essentially a little bit of a technophobe, didn't want to talk about IT. And what it meant for me as a CIO, the only time I ever got in their office was when something was broken.
Right.
So essentially it was always, you know, you were always couched in the negative. And it was a real wake-up call for me to see how quickly your approach could and had to change for the change of one person, you know, and that's something to be aware of, that CIOs need to have those organizational antenna going all the time to know what's changed, who's changed in their roles, the new CFO, how does he think, does he get on with the marketing person or not?
Yeah, you know? And I think that goes back to something we have said many times before, that you need to have flatter organizations. The more levels of hierarchy you have, the more complicated the structure is, the harder it becomes to manage it, and the harder it becomes to align people to a common vision and mission. So
and importantly, the longer decisions take.
Exactly,
because
exactly.
Got so many steps to go through. Yeah. But I think we should wrap up now, because I think you're absolutely right on that. I had exactly the same experience as Al. Also, I was a CIO. New CEO comes in and he said, one simple sentence, "I don't like IT."
Right, that's it.
That was all.
Yep.
I stuck around 6 months. I should have left immediately.
Well, what is it about these motivational CEOs? You know, have they not read the right books or something? I mean, maybe we should do a podcast on that, you know?
So essentially, yeah, what we want to wrap up with is that we need to have communication channels that are two-way, not just one-way. We need to have flatter organizations. We need to have a more emphatic approach to people, empathetic approach, I should say, to people, and understanding their role within the organization, within technology implementations, within organizational strategies and so on, and work around those. There's a lot that we could go on and on about for maybe hours if we got the chance, but then we'll save it for another podcast. Thank you for listening to our podcast today. If you have any questions or comments, or you would like to reach me, Terry or Al, you can reach out to askananalyst@omdia.com. That's askananalyst@omdia.com. You've been listening to the Omdia Digital Leaders Podcast. Until next time, stay safe.